I think when you can open an app and it feels magic, apps are positioned again to solve a problem. If I can open the app and solve that problem quickly in as little time as possible, like that's an amazing user experience.
Welcome to How to Build an App. This show will help you refine your idea, build your app, and scale it up so you can change the world. We pay for the production of this show from our full-service app development shop, Strides Development,
where we help funded startups and business owners build and scale their app projects. If you're an app founder with a brilliant idea, we want to talk to you. You can book your no-pressure, no-strings-attached strategy call at strides.dev. That's strides.dev.
Welcome to How to Build an App. I'm your host, Austin Betzer, and I'm here with Beaudry Price. Beaudry, don't you hate it when you open an app and you just feel completely lost?
Yeah, honestly, it just drives me crazy. I hate guessing what I'm supposed to do, and it really makes me feel like they don't care about me as the user.
Well, today we're talking about how to create magic in your app so your users never feel lost and they feel like you care about them. Our guest is our good friend, Brian Clay. We actually worked with Brian, and he has led the UX and UI on a handful of our apps. In this episode, we talk about the difference between your brand, your user interface, and your user experience. Brian talks about this really cool way to make sure your app doesn't suck and you don't get distracted and miss the mark. He calls it your table stakes.
But before we jump into that, I always love how these experts in their field got their start. And for Brian, he didn't actually start in development at all. He started in marketing.
Yeah, so I graduated in 2014 in advertising, and my first job was at a digital marketing agency called 97th Floor. Loved working there, but while I was working there, I was basically just doing SEO, and part of SEO, I had to learn a little bit of HTML, and I took that and started to do side projects of building websites for like friends and family. So all my websites look like crap. And I wanted them to look better. And I definitely, like, just starting out, you don't have like the resources to like hire a designer to do this. You know, these are like, I think my first one, I charged like $200 to build mm-hmm. somebody's website. So I had to figure it out on my own. So it was all side projects for several years. And then I realized I like doing this better than like SEO, digital marketing, stuff like that. So it was a difficult transition. I almost ended up like moving to Chattanooga, Tennessee from my current place in Utah and taking a pay cut. And like, it would have been a big deal for my family. But luckily I was able to leverage that job offer into a counter offer from my current company, and they gave me a UX design position. So that's kind of how I got into it. It kind of took the developer path and then realized I wasn't very good at JavaScript. So I bowed out Yeah, so now I just do design work mostly. I still do code, but I'm mostly design work.
But design, just in and of itself, is not an easy thing to do. 100%, I'm a developer. You try and ask me to design something. So for our audience, let's start just super, super basic. How would you define UX, UI? Obviously, you know, everybody, I feel like, kind of defines it differently. But what is your take on it?
That's a pretty common question. UI is actually a function of UX. UX is maybe a step above UI, and UI is a part of UX. For those that don't know, UX stands for user experience. It is so much more than just the pixels on the screen and how they're arranged. It's how did the customer actually get to the point where they're using my app? What situations are they in while they're using it? What problems are they trying to solve with the app? And does the app actually solve those problems? UX takes in user interface as part of that. And user interface is is the actual aesthetic design. It's the, you know, what the app looks like, the color choices, the typography choices, illustration, animation.
And that's UI, right? That's the actual like color, the typography, things like that. That's the UI.
Yeah. And most people will hire a UX designer to build UI, which is fine. But really, like, if you're a true UX designer, you have a tool belt of skills that involve more than just that interface design. You can do the research, you can do the product planning, you can work with the operations team to make sure that things are moving smoothly. So like, for example, I'm working on an onboarding process that's very heavily involved with our sales team and our finance team. And so most of my job is working with them to make sure that they are getting what they need to make that onboarding process as good of an experience as possible. So it's figuring out that experience. So much of it is not the interface design. It's that overall experience of how are we helping the user to solve, you know, whatever problem we're positioned to solve. But again, most people misconception is I want a UX designer so that they can make designs for my developers to build. And that's probably a pretty common role for a UX designer to fill, but it's not the end all be all.
What's an example of a good UX and an example of a bad UX? Something that might be common that you're just like, wow, that's really good. Kind of an example maybe our listeners can kind of relate to.
I think when you can open an app and it feels magic, apps are positioned again to solve a problem. If I can open the app and solve that problem quickly in as little time as possible, like that's an amazing user experience. So companies that do this really well, ones that I think about are like Stripe. That's a payment processing platform. They nail the user experience because they make it so easy for a developer to come in and process a payment within a few hours. Whereas before Stripe, that was a year-long process to process a freaking payment. So Stripe, and Stripe has very little interface. Most of their stuff is code. It's examples, it's documentation, it doesn't have much of an interface. They do have an interface, but it's not much. So Stripe is a great example of kind of a great user experience. A bad user experience, again, it's one that overcomplicates it. It puts barriers in between you solving your
problem. So if I'm an app and I'm thinking, okay, what's next? That's a bad user experience, right? Like, where do I go from here? Like, how do I go?
or if you're, you know, if there's an error on the app side and it's not communicated properly, things like that. So like Austin and I have worked on apps in the past that were basically feature stuffed, but so they're very unfocused. The key is to get your app to solve a single problem first and then branch out from there. Everyone wants to be Facebook and have a billion plus users and do everything or Amazon and have tons of different features. But the thing is, when you're starting out with a small app, like, you know, Facebook, their first thing was like, let's make, it's basically a dating app. Like, tell me if you're single or you're dating. And Amazon's first thing was book sales. Like they were there to sell books. And they've since grown out from there. So, a lot of bad user experiences happen when your app is not focused and solving a kind of a singular problem.
It's so crazy. Like literally every discovery call that we jump on, it's like, we want to build X, Y, Z to the moon. And it's always, there's always that point where it's like, let's get realistic. And it's like, what do we need done now? Like, what can we put into place and actually bring value to you to use? And what are some just like in general things that you're seeing in the industry right now that like you're excited for in design? Like, what are some trends that are going on now that are starting to be put in apps more that people should be like watching out for in terms of just general user experience?
Something I I'm excited about, and it's been going on for a while, but like the personalization of the app experience and like the access to a user's data makes it so much easier for apps to be magic, right? So like, you know, you click connect with Facebook and we automatically get your name, get your email, get your whatever information we can or allowed to get. And that makes it so that we can drive experiences that feel magic. Like, oh, I never told you that, but that's something I wanted you to do. Mm-hmm. Like that's something I wanted. Right. So the personalization experience, Amazon was probably the biggest driver on this for a long time. And everyone's kind of caught up, is it leveraging that data to make, the app experience better is super powerful. Maybe a more realistic example is like, I think of DoorDash. You know, you order from the same restaurants. It's really just going to keep recommending those restaurants that it knows you like, or maybe restaurants in the same genre. So if you're going to a lot of burger places, maybe it'll suggest another burger place that you might like, but it's not going to suggest like a vegan place, because you're carnivore, right? So it's that getting access to the data and then making a personalized experience so that the app feels like it's built just for you and your use cases. So that's something that I'm really interested in and try and build into my design.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense in terms of just like general personalization. Like Amazon just, I don't know, robs me. I feel like they just send emails every day, and they're like, "Dude, we've seen your orders. We need this like little dongle thing for your computer, or you need this book." And I'm just like, "Man, you suck." But
yep, I do. click, and it's so easy. It's one click, and it's at your house in the next like day or two. That's crazy. Like, Brian, you said something that's really interesting. You said UX drives the magic, right? Like it makes your app magical. And honestly, I don't know if there's a better way you can explain it, right? Like, dude, this app is like magic. It knows what I want, right? Which is pretty cool. That's awesome.
So in the overall like design process, like I guess not the design process, let's back up a little bit. Well, what is it that you usually see that makes you say, "Oh man, this app is terrible. Like I like do not want to use this." Is it just general friction of not knowing where to go? Like, what are you seeing in apps that you're just like disgusted by? What should people not put in their products?
Brian, you
and I know you've got
you've never thought that before. He's never thought that before.
Yeah. I think everything is perfect. I always have an opinion. Even on apps that are good, I have an opinion. Like, there's always room for improvement. But apps that fail at table stakes things are ones that just are the worst. Examples of that are, so a table stake thing is like your app is fast. Your app is, doesn't look like it was made in 2008. It doesn't use like a, you know, it's called skeuomorphic design where everything is as kind of bubbly shapes your app is like, communicative in that like if there is an error that it can actually tell you that there's an error and how to fix that error. So apps that don't take into account those basic core functionalities are like, I uninstall, like, nope, not using you, or it's not worth your time designing out a new application if it's still going to be built on a crappy platform that's slow and that doesn't deliver on those like core, again, table stakes features that all apps are expected to have now. All apps are expected to be fast. All apps, you know, websites are expected to be responsive, work on any device. If you're designing an iPad app, it should look different than an iPhone app. It shouldn't just be like cropped down into an iPhone size. It should take up the whole screen and have more, you know, more features and use that real estate. So, get your foundation right. And then worry about like, the visual aspect of it. I would rather use a bad looking app that was fast and worked than like a good looking app that was slow and didn't solve my problems.
You brought up a point and you said that if a, like typically where apps go bad when they start to do a bunch of different things. And typically when you start to do those things, you will normally see a performance hit in other areas. And so when these founders or entrepreneurs are starting to build like their MVP list or specific set of features, what are some things that they can be doing like early on in preparation before talking to you? Like basically at the end of the day, what is like your ideal client and how much work have they put in? Or do you typically like to just start from scratch? Do you typically find that process easier?
Yeah, I think you've hammered on this before, but like validate your app before you come to us, right? Like don't expect us to figure out if the problem you're solving is actually a problem. Apps are built, like ideas come out all the time that aren't real problems.
Yeah.
but people, like maybe an individual feels that it is a problem, but that's maybe not a problem for at least a large number of people. And your app either needs to solve a small problem for a lot of people or solve a huge problem for a few people. And if it can't do either of those things, then it shouldn't be an app. You need to work on it.
Yeah.
Right. So if it's only solving a small problem for a small number of people, it's probably a bad idea.
Yeah.
So Brian doesn't know, but he just did a plug for one of our other episodes, which is the Venture Validators, which we went in a whole 45 minutes of like, listen, you need to make sure that this is a good idea before you dump in hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, it just doesn't make sense to do that. And literally it's funny because that is even important in the design phase.
Yeah.
Right. Like even in this stage, that's so important.
Yeah. So when people come to you, I mean, outside of just like the typical validation, what do like, do you prefer that, you know, each person kind of just get like piece of paper and burn kind of put like a census of all the general information they need? Is it just a specific feature list of things that they want? And then we start to do the high fidelity designs. What can people start doing in the meantime or by themselves?
Yeah, I think having a general, so again, number one, validate the app, make sure it's real. Okay, now you've done that. Figure out like, what are your competitors doing? What can you bring to the table that's unique? And maybe what are they doing well and what are they failing in? So it's basically a SWOT analysis: strengths, opportunities, weaknesses, and threats. So do that kind of analysis of your business and figure out kind of what unique thing you're going to build. Because again, I've worked on apps that are just carbon copies of existing applications. So those typically don't do very well, right? You want to have a unique selling proposition, a USP. So figure that out, and then it's like everyone wants to do the fun part of like, oh, let's use this shade of blue and this piece of typography because it's super sexy. Like that's the fun part, and you should do that, but like that's like spend like 5% of your time on that. Like 95% of your time needs to be spent on like, okay, here's a problem, here's a solution, operations, like how are we actually going to do this? Can it even, like, is it technically even feasible? Or like, will I have to invent new technology to pull this off? Because that's the other thing is like, chances are if you're a small company, you're not going to be able to like get access to resources you need to be like hugely inventive. Like you're going to have to work with existing data resources. You're going to have to work with existing code libraries and things that already exist to help you build this app. Again, that's not always necessarily true. Like you can go from like nothing to something huge, but that's a much bigger hurdle to get over than if, again, if you focus on that singular problem and work in the existing ecosystem. So something that like Jeff Bezos brought up in one of his interviews is like Amazon wouldn't have been able to do what they did mm-hmm. if the post office didn't exist, because that shipping infrastructure, like post office, FedEx and UPS, if those didn't exist, Amazon couldn't exist, because that shipping infrastructure would have been impossible to build at a small stage. Right. So, but now they're at a huge scale and we're seeing Amazon Prime shipping trucks and vans driving all over the place. So now that they have the capital and the resources to do those big things, they can, but at that small stage, you have to work inside the existing system to some degree.
As people start to like hunt for their designers, what makes a good designer and like a great designer? What's different between those two?
There's a ton of value in experience. You can oftentimes a designer will set the hook with like a really pretty design or a cool mock-up. But if that's all you can do, if all you can do is make, so it's called dribble candy. Dribble is like a really popular, it's basically Instagram for UI designers.
Yeah.
It's like where you show your best self. But it doesn't actually, like a lot of designs on Dribbble aren't real apps or aren't solving real problems. They're just ideas that the designer was exploring and they put up, and nothing wrong with that.
Pretty.
Yeah, they look pretty. And again, nothing wrong with that. That's kind of how we set the hook as designers. We say, you know, look at this thing that I can produce. It's awesome. But if it doesn't have substance behind it, if it's not like something that can actually, again, solve a problem, then it's kind of baseless. So experience comes with that. Practice comes put in the freaking time, designers. Like if you want to be a great designer, put in the time. Like, you know, 9 to 5 isn't enough. At least it wasn't enough for me. Like I had to, it was all inside for me. And then it kind of encapsulated my 9 to 5 career as well. So like experience and time, I think are the biggest differentiators that a designer can bring. But not to say junior designers can't do great work. I worked with amazing juniors, but like,
it's a safer bet.
I think if you're gonna be spending a large amount of money, hire somebody with experience. And if you can find somebody who has designed apps in your vertical, that's hugely helpful. So if you're designing a healthcare app, look for designers that have designed in healthcare. Or if you're designing a food delivery app, look for a designer who's done that. You may not be able to find it. That designer may not be available or is too expensive, and that's not the end of the world. The awesome thing about a good experienced designer is, again, they have that tool belt of knowing how to solve problems, regardless of the vertical that you're in. But there certainly is value in having that trade knowledge of like HIPAA compliance or like financial services and how they interact with each other and things like that. So
typically the more experience that you could afford, I feel like in the long run, the farther it gets you, it just makes things easier, less mistakes. And that goes into like a good segue. It's like, what is like the real process of getting a design? Like, how long does it take? Like, what tools do you need? Is it just like do you need like a piece of paper? Like, what should the client experience during like the process? Like, how do people get to a good design?
It depends on the actual app. If it's an app that doesn't require any interface, then you don't need the kind of the visual prototype that we often see. But if you're an app that, you know, has an interface, then that's where you're going to need to work inside of a solid design tool. Strides, we use Figma. And that's what we use to kind of build out the visual asset as well as the prototyping asset. But before we get to that stage, we typically do, you know, we have a lot of meetings and in figuring out feature sets. We do flow charting. So we say, you know, this is where a user starts and this is their journey to the end of where the problem actually gets solved. And what are all those steps along that process? Also, in it, as part of the flow charting experience, we'll kind of figure out what is the information architecture of this app. So where do features live inside of the application? And what makes the most sense when we're trying to organize it? Because again, apps can get really big, and it's important to have a logical organization so that your user can navigate and find the feature that they need to solve whatever problem they're trying to solve.
How does that save a client money by going and spending time in the design feature rather than just, hey, let's just build this thing?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I've talked to so many people who are like, okay, let's build this. Like, we don't want to bring on a designer. Like, by the end of the budget, we need to have a finished product. And it's like, that's cool, but it's going to look like shit, right?
I think that's where you get apps that don't deliver on those table stakes things that I mentioned earlier. Is like, if you just go and build something, your app is going to be slow, complex, not organized, look like crap. Like, it's the aesthetic is going to be terrible. And aesthetic is important up to the degree that it delivers on trust. So aesthetic apps that look good garner trust. Apps that look bad are not trusted as much. So you can have a bad looking app if you can garner trust in some other way. But anyway, that's not the question. It's like, having design up front tells your developers, okay, like in a visual manner, it tells your developers, this is what I'm building. I know exactly what size that typography needs to be. I know exactly how far this needs to be spaced apart. I can see what happens when I swipe left or swipe right. I can see a backend engineer can see, okay, here's the kind of the data architecture that needs to happen in order to support these front end experiences. So a lot of projects we've had are, you know, 100 plus hours on design, but that saves you over 100 plus hours on the developer side. And in a lot of cases, I as a designer am a lot cheaper than a developer when you look at an hourly basis. So like me drag, it's like, let's say, oh, I want that button to be up a little higher, down a little lower. It's like me just dragging it up. Whereas in code, you have to go in and you have to think about like, okay, if I move this up, how's that going to,
which is the worst, by the way,
what's going to look like when it scales up and down on screen size and all those kind of things. Moving a button up and down, maybe that's not like a huge deal, but think about something a little more dramatic of like, I want to move this feature from here over to this section of the app, or I want this section of the app to now communicate with this section of the app. And what does that journey look like? That is a lot easier to do inside of a design tool. You know, I think we just recently had a project where I spent an hour on the design and it was 100 hours on the back end to deliver that design. So if that back end engineer hadn't had that design to begin with, like 100 hours could easily be 200 or 300, right?
And I think that's something that a lot of people just don't understand. Well, at least when I talk to them, it's always like, it's like, why do we need to go through all these meetings? For some people, it's bizarre to go through three calls during our onboarding process. It's like, why do you need to understand where our company's positioned? Why do you need to understand the direction? Some people might say the developers don't care. Like, all the developers care about is solving the problem. But at the end of the day, it's like the less you can make the developers think about what they need to do, the better it's going to be. I hate having to like problem solve and come up with error states and do different things. Like, if it was just in the design, like, it's not only going to save the client a bunch of money, but I as a developer am going to be a lot happier as well. And so I think that's like a really important thing to understand too, is like, when you've got this design and it's just laid out perfectly clear, Like all we do is go in and build it. We don't have to think about, is this important? Is the user going to like this? Like, we can confidently say, hey, you know, the designer knows knows what the user wants. We've just got to build this and ship it and be done. So I think that's a super, super important thing, going through the design phase and getting that done. So what makes your job easier with clients?
Yeah, so there's a really cool, just amazing meme that I've seen where it's like it's a pricing table, and it shows like a range of prices, and it starts out really cheap and it says I do all the design as the designer, and then it gets more and more expensive the more involved the client gets with the actual design process. So it is hugely beneficial to you as a client to be hands off in the design phase. It reduces bias. It keeps it so that you're hiring a designer not because they can drag boxes around in a design tool. You're hiring them because they have the experience and they know what they're doing. Like, same with an electrician. Electrician will charge you $100 to cut one wire. He's not charging you for the actual cut. He's charging you for the knowledge of knowing which wire to cut. So a designer is the same way. It's like, I know where to put this button, or I know where to put this icon in such a way that it makes sense to an end user. So you're paying for my experience and not so much the actual process of making the design, if you will. So the more hands off you are, the more that allows kind of that experience to come through. And I don't mean to say that we just leave the client in the dark. I really want the client to be involved at stages, right? Like, allow the designer to go and work and then see what they've come up with and provide feedback on that. So there definitely should be a back and forth, but don't be the over the shoulder of the client where you're like, got the hand on the mouse and just say, okay, move this over there, put that there, rename this thing. Like, that is not helpful. It doesn't produce a better app. I always say, make it better, not different. If all you're doing is like making it different, it's a waste of my time. If you're making something better, let's make it better.
No, you brought a point in terms of bias. So I mean, one could almost argue too that like a designer has a specific bias. And so, in terms of user research, what are you as the designer doing to get more knowledge or expertise in a specific field versus, you know, let's say maybe like a client who's hired you?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because we haven't talked much about user research, but it's crucial to the design process and really like some designers like to do research at stages in the design. I personally like to do continuous research where no matter at what point the design is at, I want to be talking to clients, showing them what I've got, getting their ideas, getting their feedback, understanding the user is so important to the designer, so that we know what problems they're facing and what their conditions are while they're facing that problem. I don't know how to solve the problem. The user does. So let's figure out how the user wants that problem solved. And then it's my job to try and make the interface and the experience such that it solves it in the way that the user wanted it to be solved. And then in terms of removing bias, like, again, you're hiring us because we have the experience of knowing how to conduct user research in an unbiased fashion. A lot of founders and entrepreneurs love to do user research, and you absolutely should. But when it comes time to actually get feedback on the app, you should not be in the room, because that's your baby, and nobody wants to offend your baby, right? Like, Nobody's going to say your baby is ugly, right? So, but they'll say it to me because I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm the baby's like uncle, yeah. And like I don't care if you call it ugly. So like please call it ugly so I know how to so I know how to like fix it, right? And 9 times out of 10, if the founder or the person who owns this app is in the room during the user feedback, it's going to be biased. So,
in terms of like, you know, like a deliverable, I think like what are some things that people should expect to see? I know our process at Strides, like we've got it like a pretty tight process. Like we go through and we hand off like a full user journey. We've got an official feature list. We've got, you know, MVP at stage one, and then we've got version 2 and 3 built out, and we hand those off to them. So so working with just a typical designer, what deliverables should you expect? And when should there be like a red flag of, oh, is this person like I'm not performing as much, or maybe they're not doing
I think,
what I think they are?
Again, it depends on you as a client and how you're working with your designer. But setting those clear expectations of what your deliverables are is really important, so the designer knows what you actually want. Typically you're going to want to see like, maybe a user journey, user personas, wireframing, prototyping, high fidelity design. Like those are all kind of deliverables that a designer can pump out. And then based on your budget and the application's needs, you and the designer should be able to decide what of those things should be worked on. And again, if you're hiring an experienced designer, they will know which of those is important. Like maybe a user persona isn't that important if your app communicates to everybody. If it's maybe like a fintech app that anybody can use from any age group, like maybe you don't need a persona. I think at a base level, like if you're wanting something to hand over to developers, you're going to need like a high fidelity design and a prototype built out in some design tool. Mm-hmm. Again, we use Figma. Sketch is great. Adobe XD is great. So the tool doesn't matter too much. It's mostly like get the developer that resource so they know what to build.
I think one thing that like really frustrates me, or something that I get like kind of flustered about, is when somebody comes to me with like this immaculate design and there has been zero development consideration. And I think one of the big reasons that we enjoy working with you, Brian, is because you've also seen the technical side of things. You know, when you're designing it, this is going to be a piece of shit to build or it's going to be super easy. And depending on somebody's budget, like being able to understand that. And one thing that we work really hard in our discovery call is like, hey, like what is your budget for this product? Like, but we can design it to fit within the budget. Like we can go and have you to build something that's, you know, $2 million, and we can really simplify it to finish it like we want to do that. And so I think it's super important to have a really tight relationship with a designer and to know how they work and vice versa.
Yeah.
But I'd love to hear your point on it too.
I agree with everything you said. I think much like involving users at every stage of the process, it's important to involve developers at every stage of the process. So like some companies they'll meet as like a product team with the product manager and the designer, and they come up with this awesome idea and they build out a huge prototype and a design, and then they show it to the developer and the developer says we can't build that, like, or that's going to take a year to build. So like if you had just involved bring the developer in during those initial meetings, bring them in during the design process, like their feedback is just as important as like a user's feedback, because again, like we work within constraints. I can't just design whatever I want. I have to work within the constraint of what can actually be built in the timeline and the budget that is set. If you're working with experienced people, like, they'll know how to work around roadblocks or to push through them, or if it comes down to it, just to bite the bullet and build the thing the way that it should be built. Like, it just depends on what the kind of the timeline, budget constraints are, and what can actually be done.
That's super funny that you say that, just like bite the bullet. I was literally talking to one of our developers the other day, and they're like, man, this is so hard. I don't feel bad for you. I'm like, this is exactly what you signed up for. This is like, good luck. And it's like, when it's done, it's like this, like, it's magical, like you said before. So it's super funny just listening to like all the problems that come up. I'm like, cool. You're going to be able to solve that, right? And they're like, yeah, I mean, eventually. And that's super funny. What's the difference between like the user experience and the UI? Because I typically see UI as something like really, really pretty. And then overall branding, how do those two work? Because I mean, like, you're probably not going to ask your diner to brand your company. How have you seen those relationships typically work? And then my last question would be is like, what advice would you give people starting, you know, a new development project or a new
software? And so a lot of people don't see it this way, but I see brand as another piece of the UX puzzle. Like, how does my brand and the choices I make around my, you know, my logo, my colors, typography, how does that affect the overall experience? So you should be adjusting your brand based on what experience you're trying to deliver. So like a brand like Berkshire Hathaway is going to be very different from a brand like Airbnb. Berkshire Hathaway is kind of a much older brand, and Airbnb is a much younger brand, and they're driving towards different products, and those are reflected in their apps, right? Those things are reflected in their apps. So use your brand as a tool to improve your user experience. Typically you will want your branding to at least have some idea of your brand before you start your app design. It's not a huge deal to define it like during the process or even after the process, because like, let's say you start out with like this shade of blue and you want to move to a purple. That's not a big deal. Even on the developer side, that's not a big deal. It's just changing like a hex code.
I've definitely been upset where that's not
if you're working with good people, it's not a big deal. But maybe the bigger things are if you're totally pivoting to like, I want to work with 60 to 80 year olds, whereas before we were working with 18 to 25 year olds, that's going to be a totally different aesthetic, and that's going to really impact the design of the app. So I think having those, like that core understanding of like who the user is, like who we're trying to talk to, we can develop your brand over time. And like we've done branding for companies and we've done it like during the process and before and after. And it's typically not a big deal as long as that core user doesn't change.
And then what's your driver home? If you're going to give like just a solid advice for people who are either thinking of fine designer or even just doing the design themselves, like what advice would you give them?
Yeah. So if you're looking for a designer, or you're wanting to do the design yourself, like, again, it's like, do you want to hire, an electrician who just got out of college? Do you want a DIY? Like, you want to put in the light switch yourself? Like, certainly you can do the design on your own depending on the complexity of your application. Be ready to invest the time to actually do that. You hire an electrician because they know what to do and they know how to do it quickly in a high quality fashion. If you want to do it on your own, that go for it. Like, there's nothing stopping you. And I say more power to you, but, it's going to take you more time, and it's it could end up to you spending more money in the end, because again, the developer is often going to be more expensive than the designer. And if you're increasing the amount of time that your developer is spending on your app by not hiring a designer, it's likely going to end up costing you more money and more time. So those are all things to consider. But end of the day, you got to make the decision that's right for you and your business and your idea. It may be hiring a professional designer. It may be doing it yourself. Ultimately, that's kind of an entrepreneurial decision, right?
If you want to find more information on Brian, you can follow him on LinkedIn, or you can reach out to us directly. Brian actually works with us as a lead on a lot of our projects.
If you would like to schedule a call to review your app designs, we might even be able to swing that. Head over to strides.dev and click the big button that says book a call. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you found it useful, it would really help us if you shared it with a friend. If you could just take a second, text it, or DM it to someone who would also love this, it would make our entire day.
Also, if you want to go deeper, we have full-length videos on our episodes, show notes, and a lot more at strides.dev.
There's no .com at the end of it. You literally just type strides.dev in your browser.
What else? Oh, if you guys are looking to build an app, we'd love to talk to you. You can book a free strategy call about your app with a pro at strides.dev.
Thanks for listening and have a great day.